This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to have Eric Wexler with us. Eric's the president of Providence South, the South region of Providence. He's president of operations and strategy, a brilliant, brilliant leader. We're going to talk today about how they define the region, about Providence, which is one of the second or largest faith-based health systems in the country, what he's most excited about this year, strategy, competition, what he's seeing, and a lot more. Eric, can you take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and about Providence and Providence South?
Sure. And Scott, thank you for doing these podcasts. They are wonderful and appreciate all that you do for the healthcare space. So Providence is about the fourth largest healthcare organization in the United States. We were started over 170 years ago by a group of women who were sisters. And here we are today, leading healthcare in the Pacific Northwest and West Coast. We have about 50 hospitals, 120,000 caregivers, 8,000 or so physicians, hundreds of clinics in the ambulatory space. And we consider ourselves an integrated delivery system in that faith-based delivery of care. Exciting times for all of us in healthcare as we're recovering from the COVID times. And so we're very, very excited about the future that presents a lot of transformation for us in healthcare in the future.
And talk for a moment about Providence is always one of the most innovative systems, this deep mix of compassion and innovation. What are you most focused on and excited about this year as we get into sort of almost the second half of this year? I can't believe it's already the second half.
You know, I think in healthcare, you know, as we look around us, we are in a space where commerce is having its own revolution, and it's been ongoing for several years. I mean, look what Amazon has done and others have done in the commerce space. We need to learn from that in healthcare, seize it, and then kind of reduce the noise that our patients and, you know, as well their family, but physicians and caregivers experience in using healthcare and delivering healthcare. At Providence, as you know, we have a digital information group that focuses on creating the type of technologies that allow people to ease their way when they're seeking care. You know, COVID, as difficult as that's been for all of us, it allowed us to really seize on the virtual space. You know, I remember we used to just be frustrated that we would have 7,000 virtual visits a month. And when COVID hit, we were able to take that technology and start seeing well over 70,000 people a week. And so, you know, as you take those types of innovations, you then can begin to apply that to where we really need to go, Scott. And that is, you know, really focused on value-based care and creating the right type of alignment with the payers, the providers, and those that we serve.
And how does that, Eric, as you look at strategy going forward, what does that mean? So you see all these different things. You see some systems merging together to get bigger. You see smaller systems really struggling with moderating reimbursement and higher operating costs. You see some systems talking about digital first, digital front door. What do all these different trends mean for strategy as you look at sort of Providence and the region that you run? How do you think about strategy?
Well, you mentioned size, and you know there are articles out there that say there are mergers where costs have gone up, and I think those are maybe the ones that just haven't been as disciplined about the process. But I do think scale is super important. You know, as we move into the future, being an independent hospital is really difficult, you know, from a cost perspective, from an innovation perspective. I mean, just for example, getting a new health information system is almost impossible for an independent health system, and they begin to fall behind from a technology perspective. But as we think about strategy in the future, while scale is important, you know, I mentioned, you know, this imperative on value-based care. We've got to thread that needle very carefully. You can't immediately start moving off of your acute care footprint and you know, just downloading everything you possibly can to the ambulatory setting. First of all, we don't have the assets out in that setting that allow us to care for the patients in the way that we need to. At the same time, we've got to work with our payers on how they properly reimburse in that setting so that we can maintain financial stability across the entire integrated delivery system. That means the right patient at the right place, at the right time. Most of this should be in trying to create wellness so that we keep people from getting sick through vaccinations and annual visits and the right types of screenings. But it also has got to be, as we look at where the proper care should be, that it is not always done in the acute care setting. We've got to do this in somewhat of a journey, but we can't do this at the slow pace that you're seeing across the healthcare sector at this point. We've got to move it a little bit quicker, but we're going to need our payers, we're going to need CMS and others to be in alignment with us to get that done the right way. Then we will see a total cost of care go down as we keep the population healthier.
And talk about that. I mean, the Medicare Advantage plans are closer to CMS kind of paying for it, and that you're paid an amount per member per month, so you're more incented to invest on the front end on preventive care and so forth to try and keep people healthier. But a huge amount of the marketplace is still not capitated. So, basically, you'll still see segments and providers and systems in two different camps for the foreseeable future, I take it.
You're right about that. And, you know, MA has been, you know, Medicare Advantage has been a great transition, you know, for those that put the right type of resources up front so that we can manage that care well and interact with those patients on a regular basis. We have seen, you know, in particular in our Southern California footprint and in our Oregon footprint, we've seen a lot of progress in helping to manage the cost of care, but also financially stabilizing the care delivery system at the same time. So there's a win-win there. Most importantly, you know, the patient has the right access to the care that they need and they're satisfied with it. We do move slowly in this country when it comes to transformation in healthcare. So part of, I think, the imperative for us is for us as providers to want to put care management services up front and move into a risk platform where we are willing to go at risk while we perform in providing the right level of care. Now, going back to, you know, one of the things we said earlier, we were talking about small independent health systems, and I worked at one and I loved it. I mean, I think this is especially hard for those rural or independent hospitals that don't have the kind of access to those services that you can do at scale and with a high level of expertise. So that could slow us down a little bit. It's not that it's impossible, but I think we got to come together as a sector, a healthcare sector, and find a way for all parties to learn in this space and advance it.
Thank you. And take a moment on sort of the, you talked about smaller health systems, their struggles, the movement towards value-based care. When you look at sort of strategic imperatives, what does Providence have to be just great at going forward? And then a different question about shortages of doctors, nurses, and so forth. Let me take you to this question first and then back to what Providence has to be absolutely great at. In some of the largest countries in the world, India is a great example. Just by pure necessity, they've had to move much more towards preventive care just because they don't have the doctors and nurses on the back end to take care of people. Do you have some sense they'll have to move harder and quicker towards preventive care just based on shortages of hospitals and health systems or shortages of doctors and nurses that will force the country further towards preventive or value-based care?
I think it's a big issue for us. You know, when you take a look at, you know, the plethora of need that we have, and just add on top of that the great resignation that has occurred. People are completely burnt out from the pandemic and have just left healthcare. We're now faced with trying to deliver care in a way that we haven't had to in the past. The virtual space that we talked about earlier has been, you know, a great offset, but we've probably got to get a little more innovative in retooling ourselves as providers. You know, I'll give you an example. When we think about our nursing workforce that's out there, our nurses are not operating at the top of their license. They're, you know, doing a lot of required administrative work, putting information into the health information system, or, you know, doing types of tasks that we could have others do for them, But we've got to work with the education system on allowing for new types of roles that provide support so that people that are nurses, physicians, pharmacists, and so on can operate at the top of their license. And a big portion of those licensed, you know, providers or high degree providers are going to need to now be out in the field and not inside hospitals or physician offices. You know, good example, in our innovation, we are starting to see across the country expansion of hospital at home. This is good. We've seen the outcomes of improved patient satisfaction, almost zero infection rates. People recover more quickly at home. They're in their own bed. But we're going to have the right type of clinicians that are able to see those patients out on the field. We are in an incredible time right now. Let's just acknowledge it. The inflationary rate, you know, the recovery from COVID has put the type of push on the healthcare system that I don't think it's ever seen, perhaps ever. And there's going to be a time, unfortunately, for the next year or two where we're going to need more from our payers to stabilize the health system, maybe even more from our government payers to stabilize the health system as we retool. What we don't want to have is a destabilization that's not covering our costs. So we can't work on that innovation and drive the healthcare system of the future into more of the present day.
Thank you. You've talked about a number of different pieces of this: hospital at home, digital forward, finding different ways to be more for preventive care motive. Give us a sense, Eric. Do you have a sense of what does Providence or any large health system have to be absolutely great at over the next 5 to 10 years to thrive and add value? What do you have to be just great at?
Well, I think transformation, you know, seizing on that commerce revolution. We already have outstanding quality outcomes at Providence, and we will maintain that and we'll continue to do better. We are super focused on our caregivers. I mean, we all know that they have been through an incredible, awful period. And so what we do to further support our caregivers, in particular from a behavioral health perspective, is going to be essential for our progress over the next 5 to 10 years. If we get that right, the transformation journey that we're on in this integrated delivery system, so that we are providing more preventative care out there, delivering on MA, as we talked about earlier, so that we are rewarded along with our patients for their wellness. And, you know, creating more of those ambulatory assets so that people don't have to come into the hospital, God bless you, so that people don't have to come into the hospitals or, you know, for radiological visits that could be done on an ambulatory basis or for surgical visits that could be done in a much more convenient setting. We've got to move that transformation forward. You know, one of the things that I think those of us that have big acute care footprints are conscious of is the capital drain that that causes. You know, some of the other providers that are out there, some that are in the payer space that have now got into the clinical space. United is a good example, United and Optum. They don't have acute care assets. They don't have that capital drain, but they are starting to gain momentum in the ambulatory space and as well in the physician enterprise space. We are burdened with the full complement, as it were, of an integrated delivery system. So we're going to have to figure out how transformation supports that acute care space, because others are not going to go into that that line of our work because it's just too costly and the margins are too low. And that, I think, you know, Scott, I would say, you know, we need to understand the for-profit imperative and how that relates or does not relate to healthcare in general. What portion of our cost of healthcare is getting drained into, you know, shareholders' pockets, which, you know, we're in a capitalistic society. It's understandable and acceptable, but it doesn't belong in healthcare. And how do you migrate in a way that doesn't destabilize that, but doesn't also drive up the cost of healthcare so that, you know, people are profiting from it? It's a tricky space. Yeah.
No, it really is. In your situation, where you said it exactly right. If you look at sort of the NASDAQ and the Dow as two kind of examples, these last 5-7 years, all these companies in the NASDAQ have excelled because they're not holding bricks and mortar. in on average. Not it's a generalization, but they're more technology driven, less bricks and mortar driven, and it's been a huge benefit for NASDAQ companies. Of course, currently some of that technology, those technology stocks, the bloom is coming off the rose. But at the end of the day, we all know, sort of like that we need the big hospitals and health systems to be able to take care of a population of the size we have, particularly when patients are very sick and need the care that comes only in health systems. So trying to figure out how we support that as a nation, while having hospitals and health systems also compete with all these other players that are burdened with lots of expensive assets that we need. So it's really a challenging situation, and hospitals fight against that, work against that, get better and better at what they do in this time of so much disruption and so much competition. Eric, no, I think you've really summarized it well and said it well, and I appreciate it. Folks, on listening to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast, Eric Wexler, President of the South Region and of Operations and Strategy, Providence Healthcare. Providence, I think that right now the second largest faith-based system in the country. Thank you so much for joining. Just a remarkable mixture of compassion, empathy, competence, at innovation at Providence. And Eric, you embody that, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Scott. Look forward to catching up again. And once again, thanks for all you do for our healthcare space.
Thank you. Thank you for your leadership.